This is Radio Times. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan, in for Marty Moscowane. A brand new survey from the Pew Research Center has found the religious landscape could be shifting in a big way in America. The number of Americans identifying themselves as Christian dropped 8 percentage points in 7 years to 71% of the population. At the same time, the percentage of Americans who say they're unaffiliated with any religion jumped 6%. What does this say about our changing religious identity? And where do other faiths and cultures and politics fit in? Joining us for some insight this hour are Gregory Smith, Associate Director of Research for the Pew Research Center. And he's also one of the lead authors of Pew's new religious landscape study. Hello, Gregory.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Sure. And Michael Hout is a professor of sociology at New York University and co-director of the General Social Survey at the University of Chicago. Hi, Mike.
Good morning, Mary.
Good morning. So, Greg, let's go to you first. According to the latest Pew survey, the number of Americans who call themselves Christians slid in the past half dozen or so years. How would you characterize that change?
Well, I would characterize the change as a pretty sharp decline in the share of American adults who identify with Christianity. Now, to be sure, the United States remains home to more Christians than any other country on the planet. And it's worth keeping in mind that the big majority of American adults continue to identify with the Christian faith. Still, an 8-point decline in 7 years since we first conducted this study is really pretty remarkable. And on the other hand, while Christianity is declining as a share of the population, as you mentioned, you have people who say they have no religion. That group is growing up almost 7 points in just 7 years. So these are pretty striking changes, I think.
So would you think that the thought that immediately came to mind is you have a number of Christians dropping and then you have the number of folks who say they're unaffiliated rising. Do you think that many of these folks, Christians who are leaving, are just declaring themselves unaffiliated?
Yes, most people who say that they were raised as Christians and who no longer identify as such have become religiously unaffiliated. They're people who say they are atheist or as agnostic or who describe their religion as just nothing in particular. It's not so much that people are leaving Christianity for other faiths. Most people who leave Christianity are doing so for no religion. I should also point out that another big part of what's going on here is generational replacement. You have a new generation of young adults who are far less Christian and far more religiously unaffiliated than their parents' and grandparents' generations were.
Michael Hout, why don't you jump in? Why do you think this is happening?
Good morning.
Well,
first of all, I'll reinforce Greg's immediate point that demography is an important part of the issue. The generation that's passing away, the so-called greatest generation, was also the most religious in American history. And so they're very hard to replace in many ways. And one of the ways is in their devotion and membership in a lot of different kinds of organizations, including local churches and synagogues, so that their degree of participation exceeded that of their parents and grandparents and as well as of their children and grandchildren.
Interestingly, David Lanhart writes in the New York Times that a remarkable 25% of Americans born after 1980, those are the millennials, are not religious compared to 11% of baby boomers and 7% of the folks you were referring to, the greatest generation. Why is there such a difference between the generations? What is happening, Michael?
I think one of the things that's going on is a deep skepticism of all kinds of big organizations on the part of millennials. They're less attached to the labor force. They're marrying later. They don't vote in the same kind of numbers as others do. And they're building a kind of do-it-yourself religious orientation of not being affiliated with any church, but reading on their own and coming up with some conclusions. Now, there are many also who just don't think about religion, but they're, I think, the minority of this group, and the surging part of the trend is, in fact, among people who are skeptical of organizations, but interested in some kind of spiritual life.
So even if they're not religious, it doesn't mean they're not spiritual.
Right. That's exactly what they tell us. Some organizations ask that as one question, making people choose. But both at the General Social Survey and Pew, we've asked it as separate questions and are in harmony on this finding that people who are engaged with organized religion often think of themselves as spiritual too, but the unaffiliated, many of the unaffiliated, almost half, use some form of a spiritual label to describe themselves.
So, and with the unaffiliated, do we know how they practice their spirituality?
Greg, do you guys have a question on that? We don't, actually.
Yes, we've asked various questions about this over the years, and first, let me just reiterate that these data are absolutely consistent with what Mike was describing, in the sense that many of the religiously unaffiliated are believers. In fact, most people who are religiously unaffiliated in these data describe their religion as nothing in particular. They don't identify as atheist or as agnostic. They just say they have no particular religion. Now, many of them go on and tell us that religion is at least somewhat important in their lives. Many of them say that they pray at least occasionally. Most of them say that they believe in God. So they do those kinds of things. I'll tell you one thing that's interesting in our data that we've seen over the years. The one thing they do not do is they do not go to church. And perhaps that's rooted in this disconnect from institutions of all kinds that Mike was describing. But that's one thing they really have in common. They avoid going to religious services.
I'd like to kind of get to the root of that. So in conclusion, many of these folks who are not affiliated do believe in God, do pray, but they don't go to church. So have any of the surveys parsed out why?
What, do you want to take a...
I'll take a try at it, Greg. Yeah. One thing to keep in mind is one of the reasons we're both reporting so strongly on the affiliation and not talking much about attendance is that the data on attendance do not show nearly as many dramatic changes, which indicates to me that what's going on is that people who in the past would have somehow affiliated or at least expressed in a survey that they had a religious affiliation despite the fact they didn't go to church, has now been replaced by an expression of non-affiliation. So that if you imagine an interview being done 25 years ago, a representative of either a poll or the General Social Survey shows up at the door and says, or on the phone and says, what's your religion? Back 25 years ago, a lot of people who weren't very active would say whatever the name of the religion they were raised in and give an answer commensurate with that. But nowadays, in part because of the politics of expressing a religious affiliation and in part for other reasons, they don't do that anymore. They say, no, I have none. And so there's very little change over time in church attendance, and yet this big rise in unaffiliated people. So my inference, we aren't interviewing, obviously, the same people we interviewed 25 years ago, but my inference is that in the past they gave a denominational answer that was in their roots, and now they don't.
You just said something a moment ago that was very interesting, the politics of expressing a religious affiliation. Could you get into that a bit for us?
Yeah, well, yeah, before Reagan, there wasn't much of a political statement implied in saying you were Baptist versus Methodist versus Catholic. And over time, because of abortion politics first and gay marriage politics next and other kinds of issues that religious leaders have taken strong stands on, people who are not active in those religions but were raised in them are now trying to distance themselves from that inference that someone would draw. If you hear that someone's a Baptist, you make certain suppositions about their orientation toward politics and sexuality that the people who agree with church leaders own up to and are embracing, but there is a minority of the population in those denominations who are now stepping back, stepping away from it, saying, "Don't make those inferences about me and expressing it as a non-affiliation.
Greg, is the decline more significant in one part of the country as compared to another? And we're talking about the decline in the number of folks who identify as Christian, say the West as opposed to the Bible Belt?
Well, actually, I think one of the most interesting findings that come out of these data is that these trends are very broad-based. You see them among a variety of demographic groups, among men and women, among younger people and older people, among college graduates and those with less education. And you see it in every region of the country. Now, every region of the country had sort of its own starting point. The West has traditionally had more people who are religiously unaffiliated than other regions. The South, sometimes referred to as the Bible Belt, has many more evangelical Christians than other regions of the country. And each region of the country retains kind of a certain distinctive religious character. But these trends, the growth of the religiously unaffiliated and the decline in the share of the population that identifies with Christianity are really seen everywhere.
So, Gregory Smith, are you surprised that the decline is seen in the Bible Belt as well?
Well, yeah, I think it's very striking. I guess not surprised in the sense that there's no reason to think that the South would be immune to sort of big, broad societal trends that affect everybody. But I do think it's striking, if you think of the South as the Bible Belt, that that the same 8-point decline in the share of the population identifying as Christian nationally is seen in the South. The share of Southerners who currently identify with Christianity stands at about 3/4, down from upwards of 8 and 10 when we first did this study in 2007.
Mm-hmm. Michael Hout, can we put some blame on film and television and music for helping to shape cultural attitudes toward religion over the last few decades?
It's a loaded question. I think that the it's a popular supposition. Claude Fisher and I wrote about this about 10 years ago. There was a lot of worry in the U.S. in the 1930s that radio was going to undermine our traditional religious belief and so on. And in fact, religious affiliation and attendance at religious services increased for about 25 years. So I think that we're always thinking, oh, something new is behind what's undermining this. And I think there is something new here, but it's not the mass media. What's new is the polarization of everything, the political polarization of every aspect of American life. And I'm not surprised that you see it in the Bible Belt. I think that somebody who holds what would be considered politically liberal views in a southern city is, first of all, they're not they're a minority, but not invisible, and probably more at risk of being of people making certain inferences than a person in, say, New York City or San Francisco.
Michael Hout, we've got to take a short break here. Sure. We'll be back in just a moment. We're looking at a changing religious identity in America. If you'd like to join the conversation, the number is 1-888-477-9499. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan in for Marty Moskowane. Stay with us. This is Radio Times. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan in for Marty Moskowane. A new Pew Research survey has found that fewer Americans say they belong to an organized religion, and the number of those who are unaffiliated is rising. Our guests are Michael Hout, professor of sociology at New York University, and Gregory Smith is associate director of research for the Pew Research Center. If you'd like to join the conversation, here's the number, 888-477-9499. Send us an email, if you like, at radiotimes@whyy.org, or a tweet works just as well, at WHYY Radio Times. So, Michael and Greg, I guess, do we have consensus that politics in America is a main culprit in driving people away from religion?
I think there's certainly a lot of evidence for that. Just to follow up on some of what we've been discussing, one of the things that's really interesting to know about the religiously unaffiliated is that they are a strongly democratic and pretty politically liberal constituency when it comes to politics. When we think about religion and politics, when we talk about religion and politics, I think we often think about the religious right and Christian conservatives and evangelicals and their role in recent elections, and that's all very important, but it's also important to keep in mind that the religiously unaffiliated have become a very strong Democratic constituency. In some ways, they're kind of the counterweight to the Christian conservative movement within American politics.
So at the end of the day, then, will the rise in nuns, N-O-N-E-S, as the unaffiliated have been dubbed, will the rise in nuns help the Democratic Party?
I think that's a good question, and I know Mike has some thoughts about that. He might argue that that the causal arrow actually goes in the other direction. But one thing I would just point out is that we've talked about how the religiously unaffiliated are disconnected not just from religion but from other institutions. And one thing that's interesting is that as this group has grown, as a share of the total population, their share of the electorate hasn't kept pace. That is to say, the religiously unaffiliated seem to turn out to vote at lower rates than other groups. The share of voters who are religiously unaffiliated really hasn't grown in the last few elections in the same way that they have in the general public.
And, you know, it seems, I think that is expressed in the makeup of Congress. Congress appears to be pretty devout overall, doesn't it? According to Pew, just 0.2% of its members identify as unaffiliated with any religion.
That's true. There are very few members of Congress who describe themselves as being religiously unaffiliated.
Okay. So,
and if I might quote a Pew stat back at Greg, I thought last year's finding that that people were more skeptical of candidates who expressed no religious affiliation than they were of any other category of candidates. So they proposed, would you vote for a person if kinds of questions, and the people the representative sample of Americans was more likely to say no, I would not, if the supposition was the person had no religion.
That's interesting.
Yeah, actually, I'm glad you bring that up. I think it's really interesting that even as the religiously unaffiliated are growing, they remain a pretty unpopular group in the United States. People, as you mentioned, are less likely to say they'd support an atheist presidential candidate. We also did some research last year where we asked people to rate a number of different religious groups on kind of a feeling thermometer, tapping into their views of a bunch of different religious groups, and atheists came in right at the bottom. So even though their ranks are growing, they remain pretty unpopular in American culture.
So where are the unaffiliated involved then? In what? Do we know?
You know, I'm not sure. That question has come up a lot. You know, if they're not attending church what kinds of things are they doing on Sunday? And I'm not sure exactly. I think it would be fair to assume that they're probably quite involved in social networks, maybe in a way that is distinctive of this new generation. But I'm not sure I'm not sure what exactly church or involvement in religious organizations is being replaced by.
Okay, we have a question from John. He asks, could they explore the economic reasons behind people not going to church? Is it because there are two working parents in many instances and people might not have the time? What do you think?
The Tanyu studies, neither Greg's study nor our study are Tanyu studies, but there are data on how Americans spend their time, and they do indicate that especially among parents, the organized activities of their kids, whether it's soccer or piano or what have you, often are scheduled for Sundays because the two working parent family might be able to get the kid to that activity on a Sunday. And that's a popular activity, but there's also, but it's not definitive evidence. I mean, there are lots of hypotheses about it, but I don't see any evidence of there being an economic gradient here. The unaffiliated have lower incomes than others, but there's no statistical affiliation that you would call that you would even suspect that there's any kind of causal effect there. It's mostly having to do with the fact that they're younger and just getting started with their adult lives, not because they're impoverished or anything, or on a trajectory that will result in a life of poverty. I think that they are just still getting started.
He had an interesting note. Sundays have gotten a lot busier than they were when I was a child decades ago. And how have churches and other institutions reacted to that? I'm assuming providing more services?
Yeah, well, two of the Catholic parishes in Chicago that are bucking the national trends are downtown parishes that started out as pre-K, start out as daycare and turn into pre-K education centers, recruit the parents of these young kids, and then they have turned into revived. St. Pat's on the west side in particular is a vibrant parish that had to expand the school in order to accommodate all the kids whose parents are working downtown and dropping the kid off on the way to school instead of using a neighborhood school. And so this kind of reaction was pioneered in the mega churches in suburban and exurban areas and is being imitated now by a number of downtown kinds of churches in various cities. And those are adaptations that may very well encourage more attachment among busy parents. I don't know how you attract people who aren't married yet and have no kids, but this is working among young parents.
Okay, let's get to the phones. Norma in Newtown, Pennsylvania, welcome to Radio Times.
Hi. I would just like to share what I feel that I know about what people are doing who are in this category. I've been in that category for many, many years. And what I've been doing is I have been working with multiple faith traditions in the mystical line of those traditions. And I work with a lot of young people who are also just totally disenfranchised with conventional religion. It doesn't speak to them. It's often anti-gay. None of the views reflect the modern times. And they're at retreats with Ram Dass, with Pema Chodron at Omega Institute, at Garrison Institute above New York, all around the country in Taos. There's a deep longing in these young people for spirituality, but not in the traditional sense.
And Norma, are you finding that they are finding that spirituality in the alternate areas, arenas?
Absolutely. Absolutely, no question about it. And in a true and real and wonderful way, because each person's path is personal and different, but we all meet in community, and that's the thing. There's a community of people that has been started by many of these great teachers, and also there are online programs. I personally have been doing online courses of the Shift Network, spiritualityandpractice.com, and that's despite the fact, in addition to the fact that I, you know, have a small synagogue that I belong to. I'm a Sufi, have been a Sufi for 35 years, which is from the mystical Islamic tradition. Mm-hmm. And I also practice Christianity as a Quaker. So I'm doing all of them, but if you ask me to pick a religion, I can't pick one because I'm an interspirituality is actually what's happening. There's interspiritual training of ministers in New York City at the One Spiritual Alliance. So there's incredible stuff going on, but it has nothing to do with mega churches. It has nothing to do with, you know, the church down the street or going on Sunday. It's not an on-Sunday thing.
Norma, thank you very much for the call to Radio Time. She raises an interesting point, Greg. Interspirituality, people who embrace a number of different faiths at once. Did you take a look at that in the Pew poll?
Yeah, well, that's a very interesting experience, and I'm sure that there are many, many people out there all across the country who share similar experiences and who are looking into the basic elements of a number of different faith traditions. In our survey, people did have the opportunity to kind of volunteer that they have multiple religious identities, but very few of them actually did that. Most people do choose one. I should also point out that while it's true that many people among the religiously unaffiliated are spiritual, are believers, are religious even in some way, I don't think I think we should be careful not to overstate the degree to which they are kind of practicing religion in new and alternative ways. There are some who are doing that, but our data suggests that that's not really characteristic of most of them. We've asked a variety of questions about involvement and engagement with a number of non-Christian religious practices over the years. And there are religiously unaffiliated people who participate in them, but they don't do so at any higher rates necessarily than people who belong to Christian traditions. Mm. So this kind of alternative approach to spirituality, it is there. It's true of some of the religiously unaffiliated, but we shouldn't overstate its prevalence. Many people among the religiously unaffiliated really are not particularly religious. They're certainly far less religious than people who retain an identity with a religion.
Okay, fair enough. In the publication Forward, Jane Eisner writes of the Jewish population, there are demonstrable civic downsides to an increasingly secular citizenry. A survey of American Jews showed that the unaffiliated and intermarried are less likely to join a synagogue, give to Jewish charity, educate their children in a Jewish manner, connect to Israel, feel an obligation toward their fellow Jews, in short, are less likely to care about the Jewish community and its continuity. Let's focus on intermarriage. And, you know, in reference to all faiths, how does religious intermarriage affect religious affiliation?
Well, one of the things these data suggest is that religious intermarriage may be increasing. And we say that because if you look at people who got married recently, they are more likely to have a spouse from a different religion than their own as compared to people who've been married for a long time. Now, we have to be careful with those data because we're looking only at current intact marriages. And so if intermarriage is more likely to end in divorce, or if you have people who've been married for a long time who convert to match the religion of their spouse, then we wouldn't be picking up on those things in these data. But the data suggests that intermarriage is becoming a bit more common. The data also suggests that the growth of the religiously unaffiliated is connected to that, in that one very common kind of intermarriage you see these days is intermarriage between someone with a religion, often a Christian, and a spouse who has no religion. So that the growth of the nuns seems to be connected with a growth in religious intermarriage.
Hmm. So then there is data on, say, the children, if they're exposed to both, what it is they eventually embrace?
Actually, we don't have that data in this particular survey.
Okay.
Mike, have you looked at that at all?
I have not. There are researchers who have, but this isn't mine. I want to go back to one of the things, though, that Greg said that's really important, which is that 25 or 30 years ago, there was a lot of pressure on couples to find a family religion that that is, when there was a marriage, an intermarriage between people from different traditions, they would find something that they could both agree on, and that would become the family's religion. They would both, either one would convert to their spouses, or they would both convert to some third denomination. And that doesn't happen nearly as frequently as in the past, so that not only the special case Greg mentioned of someone marrying someone affiliated, marrying someone non-affiliated and not reconciling that, there's also a less a tendency for Catholics and Methodists married together to pick one or you know, both join the Presbyterian Church or something.
Michael, do we have a sense of why?
I think, in fact, what it is that the sense of ecumenism that many denominations cultivated in the 1960s has made these distinctions less important and compelling to people, and the pressure that my father was under to become Catholic is no longer put on non-Catholic men who marry Catholic women. And similarly, you know, I just picked that one out because it's my dad. But the data show that those kinds of mutual accommodation solutions are really prevalent among most couples. Mm-hmm. There could, in fact, also be additional information if we had better data on how important religion was to people's lives 30 years ago. We got great data on how it is today, but from 30 years ago, we might be able to get a little leverage on this. Perhaps religion isn't as important in either spouse's life these days, and so they're comfortable retaining their affiliations because it's just not quite as central to their life as it was to their parents' lives.
Okay. Gregory Smith, I know you've got to run in a moment or two, but I've got one more question for you. Carol sent an email. She asks, were the questions asked all exactly the same? Were the age, income, etc., with the individuals controlled from 7 years ago, so they were comparable? Tell us a bit about the poll taking itself.
Yes, that's a great question. The questions are the same. We asked the same questions this time around about religious identity that we asked when we first did this study in 2007, and that was precisely because we wanted to be able to compare the results from then to now to be able to see how things changed. Now, the people we interviewed are different people. We didn't actually go back and interview the same people today that we talked to in 2007. They're different cross sections, nationally representative cross sections, interviewed at two points in time. But the questions we asked, yes, are the same, precisely to allow for these kinds of comparisons.
Interestingly, the U.S. Census doesn't ask people about their religious affiliation. That's my understanding. Which is why Pew did the survey. Why is that?
Well, I think that it goes back to, you know, certain political principles about the separation of church and state. The census has asked questions about religion in the distant past, and my understanding is that there are other government-sponsored surveys that might include religion questions, but that the census, which Americans are required to complete, does not ask about religion, because to do so, would seem to cross that line, the separation of church and state.
Right.
Okay, yeah, we've actually got a break coming up here, and we do have to say goodbye to Gregory Smith, Associate Director of Research for the Pew Research Center. Greg, thanks so much for joining us for this portion of Radio Times.
It's great to be with you. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much. Michael Hout will be with us through the rest of the hour. He is Professor of Sociology at New York University. We have a number of phone calls standing by, so we're going to get to those after the break. And if you'd like to join the conversation, give us a shout at 888-477-9499 or a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan, in for Marty Moskowain. This is Radio Times. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan, in for Marty Moskowain. A new Pew Research survey has found that fewer Americans say they belong to an organized religion, and the number of those who are unaffiliated is rising. Michael Hout is with us for this portion of Radio Times. He's a professor of sociology at New York University and also co-director of the General Social Survey at the University of Chicago. Michael, I'd like to take a look at Europe and the United States in just a moment, but we've got a number of folks who've been standing by for a while on the phone waiting. So let's get to Laurel first. Laurel in Haddonfield, New Jersey, welcome to Radio Times.
Thank you. I enjoy your show.
Thanks.
I was going to say I've done a few things in my life, and one of them is going to the seminary. I find myself being an apologist to both sides, but maybe the disconnect is what we see in the media. We hear gays, gods, guns, and gynecology, and maybe that's not what... what the churches say, but the fact of the matter is the basic tenets of Christianity, of love and faith, and God loves us, feed the hungry. When you see things like food stamps are cut, you hear a lot about gays, but you see no outrage from any church member that I've seen. I read the New Yorker, I don't see anything. And the disconnect is, even if you had a heart, if you will, of Jesus, even the churches don't say anything back.
So, Laurel, how would you...
They don't clear it up for people.
Do you have any thoughts about how to turn that around, the disconnect?
The secular humanists. I mean, they're the ones that seem to be talking, so they follow them.
Hmm. Michael, what do you think? Is there a disconnect?
I believe that the politicization that we were referring to earlier is exactly that disconnect, that there is a sense among, almost all the changes among political moderates and liberals. They are walking away from organized religion as the churches get louder. You mentioned an email, somebody was interested in raising the European comparison. Or state-sponsored religion there has has bred or encouraged a similar kind of disaffiliation in the population. If you want to dissent from the position of the state, you disaffiliate from the state's church. I think that in general, the religious life is somewhat allergic to politics, and as the volume of political discourse in the religious area gets louder, a certain segment of the population leaves.
How did the modern religious right emerge in this country?
that would take
That's a whole show in itself. Give a quick answer.
To get a 2 or 3 minute version, I think there was a concerted effort on the part of a number of conservative Christian leaders to influence politics especially concerned with the potential influence of communists in the government and the association between communism and godlessness. And I think that their efforts were directed as much anti-communist as in proselytizing their own faiths, but that over time, I think that even moderates came to that view, people like President Eisenhower, and so positioning the Christian United States against the godless communists worked as good Cold War politics, and so that put us on a slope, and then along came Reagan, and things began to shift rightward, and the association between organized religion and conservative social agenda emerged pretty much in the mid to late 1980s. It's remarkable. It's a time of Roe versus Wade. It was very difficult to predict a person's attitude toward abortion, knowing their political party. And today, it's one of the strongest correlations in political science.
All right, we've got a tweet from Mitchell. Forecasting into the future, he says, what can be learned by looking to Europe regarding a more secularized America?
Well, I think, as I said a minute ago, the lesson from Europe is that the entanglement of church and state isn't good for organized religion, that a segment of the population will always oppose the prevailing political winds, and that if the church is sailing on the same winds, then they'll walk away from the church too. And I think that was the lesson. In 19th century France, it has become the lesson in 21st century Ireland and frankly in 21st century United States as well.
Interestingly, Ross Douthat, I'm not sure I'm pronouncing his name correctly, writes several years back in the Atlantic that Europe might start to look more like America with a low-grade culture war underway between secularists and religious Muslim immigrants. And he adds, immigrants from Africa and Latin America have injected a new zeal into European Christianity. So perhaps it's swinging the other way a little bit in Europe.
There's no evidence of that, but social science, broad representative populations. I think that I would never question his political instincts. He's been right on a lot of things, but in general, I think that he's right to draw attention to immigrants both as a source of aspirants and also a source of political mobilization, but it's far too complicated to try and import what's going on, say, in France right now with respect to the Muslim presence there, especially second generation folks living in big French cities, and anything in the United States. I don't think that it's just sufficiently different. The whole definition of citizenship in the two countries is so different that I wouldn't touch that one.
Okay. The phones have been lighting up, so let's get to them. Peter and Wyomissing, you're live on Radio Times.
Hi.
Hello.
Can you hear me?
Sure.
Okay. I'm just thinking that what it sounds like that we are returning to our roots. Our country was founded by a significant number of people who called themselves deists. In other words, they believed in a greater spiritual force, but didn't necessarily say, I'm a Presbyterian, etc. that's the outcome. As far as causes, I think perhaps one cause is the lid was taken off the sort of social imperative that you should belong to a church, that if you did not go to a synagogue, church, temple, whatever, that maybe you were a little suspect in the 50s and 60s, whereas otherwise, well, you're not a Christian, but at least you went to Shoal or you went somewhere else. That no longer applies, so people can go or not without any societal eyebrow raising or tut-tutting. And last but not least, what was referred to earlier is this mix of politicization of religion and mixed marriages, etc. So you also have a sense that the religions that actually would cater to the more deist person, the Friends, Unitarians, Zen temples, are also religions that don't believe in publicizing their existence. And on the flip side, the other phase, the ones that can really differentiate themselves and say what they're about, tend to be more dogmatic, thou shalt not. And then in a lot of faiths in the middle, especially the traditional Protestant ones, you ask them, why Congregationalist? Why not Methodist? Why Methodist? Why not UCC? Very difficult to get an answer out of them.
Peter, you're making a lot of points here, so we're going to have to move along, but I thank you so much for your call to Radio Times. Michael Hout, I'm a little bit rusty on my history of deists in this country.
Well, I think my pushback on Peter is just that this change is largely bottom-up. It's leaderless. It is not being driven by people who are writing tracts in intellectual elite circles, but rather it's a behavioral change among everyday Americans, whereas the deist movement really was a very elite intellectual movement, as was the transcendental movement of Ralph Waldo Emerson that turned a bunch of Puritans into Unitarians and so on. A lot of these movements that he's mentioning were very much top down and intellectually quite elite, and this is much more grassroots. This is a change that shows up in broad popular surveys and much less in the public discourse in magazines, blogs, etc.
Which brings me to this point. David Campbell, a political science professor at Notre Dame, says, quote, "It's likely we'll see a secular left coalesce into a movement in the way that 30 years ago we saw the religious right coalesce politically." But he goes on to say, "I'm not sure it will have the same clout because the left lacks a religious infrastructure and it's more of a challenge to mobilize the troops."
Well, certainly this is one of the this is not a random email. This guy has more intellectual credentials than his book American Grace is a major piece in the last 20 years of scholarship on this issue. I think that the main point that I would push back, and Greg alluded to it earlier, is that the causal arrow has turned around. I think we can't the unaffiliated are a product of politics, not a force in politics, and their low turnout rates are another way of saying what Professor Campbell's saying, which is that they are they're hard to mobilize because they don't gather. Churches are a great gathering place, and
sure.
Political mobilization that's based on a weekly meeting is a great organizing tool and something that is scattered over random 1 to 3 p.m. brunches across the country is not going to quite cut it.
Let's get back to the phones. Ethan in Kennett Square is joining us now on Radio Times. Hello, Ethan.
Good morning. I think a lot of the discussion has been around people opting out of churches, and my experience might not be generalizable, but I and other members of my family have actually been explicitly thrown out of churches for views that were considered, unacceptable, often politically. So my father was a Presbyterian elder, was thrown out for arguing that gay people should be allowed to serve as ministers. My wife was a Catholic school teacher, was asked to leave the church for her support for Planned Parenthood. I have friends who were asked to be married as gay couples and instead were asked to leave their denominations. Even things like I had a friend who was asked to leave a church because she had not been baptized by full submersion, and the evangelical branch thought that should be the case. And so, and I think, I mean, obviously there's many people who feel unwelcome because of something that a church says or does or happens, but I think there are probably many people who are actually would rather be in a church but have been ejected. That's a thought that might explain some of those statistics as well.
Thanks, Ethan, for the call. So, Michael, do you think that this might account for a chunk of the unaffiliated?
That's a very interesting idea. I think we could only find that if we were talking to the same people over an extended period of time. But it's a tremendous experience to bring in into the conversation. I think that's a nice addition.
Michael Hout, we have this Facebook comment from Stax, who says, I'm the head of the Philadelphia Coalition of Reason, and we have experienced an increase in young atheists and humanists. Millions of Americans are abandoning ancient superstitions in favor of science and reason. Thoughts?
Well, the survey data show about a 1-2% increase from a base of 4% of those who are atheist or agnostic. It's 2% of 225 million people is a pretty big number, enough to fill a medium-sized city. But I don't think, as a segment of the population, it's quite as large as his comment suggests.
Michael, the number the Pew survey referenced the number of Americans who identify themselves as Christians dropping over the last 7 years. Do we know much about other faiths such as Judaism or Islam?
I think the experience of American Judaism is instructive in this, even though it was never as large as Christianity. But one of the things that happened over time was the birth rate fell dramatically, and Jews, frankly, didn't reproduce themselves over time, and fell as a segment of the population that was then accelerated by the fact that relatively few of the recent immigrants to the country were Jewish either. And so they've fallen from 5.5% of the population in the 1970s to a little under 2% in the Pew study. I think that again points at demography, which is where I always start, as an important part. The mainline Protestant denominations have had a birth rate of substantially less than 2 per couple for the last 40 years, and part of their decline is this very thing.
So to wrap us up,
they're not reproducing themselves.
Okay, we've got about 20 or 30 seconds left. So to wrap this up, the main reason, if there is a main reason, that there is that there is disenchantment with organized religion and that some are leaving, is what? And the second part of that question is, do you see it continuing?
I think that politics is at the root of it. I thought 10 years ago that pretty much that political push had been spent, but that I was wrong. It continues, and I think that there's no sign that it is slowing down, and I continue to be surprised every time the data come out showing that the trend is continuing, and Pew simply reinforces that impression.
All right, Michael Hout, thank you so much for joining us for Radio Times.
My pleasure, Mary. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. He's professor of sociology at New York University and also co-director of the General Social Survey at the University of Chicago. This reminder, visit our Facebook page and check out our podcasts by heading to our homepage, whyy.org/radiotimes. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan, in for Marty Moscawain. Hour 2 is just ahead.